Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from international journals, clinical articles, and the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Home Study Education Program. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said for her perspective on topics related to women's health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, January 2004. Last month, I discussed the importance of dietary supplements and why food alone cannot possibly supply anyone with everything they need, especially athletes engaged in routine, strenuous physical activity and exercise. Such a notion is simply inconsistent with sports nutrition science and objective medical assessment. In this edition of Clinical Review, I'd like to continue my discussion on the topic of dietary supplements and focus on some of the reasons why conventional mainstream physicians don't prescribe natural health products as a primary defense and treatment against disease. Dr. Matthias Rath, MD, is a leading expert in cardiovascular disease and nutrition. Rath is the director of cardiovascular research at the Linus Pauling Institute of Science and Medicine in Palo Alto, California, and is the author of Eradicating Heart Disease, a book that I would recommend to any heart patient or, for that matter, any person with a heart. Rath believes that heart attacks and strokes are not diseases, but rather symptoms caused by vitamin deficiencies. He states that vitamin C deficiency is the primary cause of cardiovascular disease, and then proves his case with the following evidence. Vitamin deficiency leads to weakness of blood vessel walls. This causes the deposition of the repair molecule, lipoprotein A, and this eventually builds up over time into atherosclerotic deposits and plaque, which decrease blood flow to the heart muscle. Rath also prescribes many other nutrients for heart and artery disease, including lysine, proline, carnitine, vitamin E, CoQ10, magnesium, niacin, B-complex, and several trace elements. So why don't the majority of allopathic physicians take part in proclaiming the good news about the benefits of vitamin C? I think there are many reasons. First, North American physicians lack the financial incentive to prevent disease, as they are rewarded by governments and insurance companies for treating disease based on the name of the condition and a reference schedule of time, kind of like how car mechanics in an automobile repair shop function. Once the machine or the car is poked and prodded by the mechanic, a cost estimate is given based on the present cost of labor and spare parts, and that's very much what happens in conventional medicine. This is the business of medicine. The more patients a doctor can process in 8 to 12 hours, the more they are paid. It takes far less time to diagnose a disease and treat symptoms with a prescription drug than it does to get to know the patient on a personal, deeper level, identify the cause of the problem, and recommend a constructive lifestyle approach based on the patient's biological uniqueness. My mentor and personal physician, for example, who is now retired, spent no less than 1 hour with each patient and no more than 6 patients a day. Now, this is phenomenal. And I'll tell you why he did this. He did it to protect himself from medical burnout. And also, he said it was impossible to diagnose and treat the emotional, mental, and physical needs of each patient in less time. Here's another reason why physicians don't focus on some of the natural health products as a priority. They have little or no training in nutrition and biological medicine. The logic here is, how can someone teach you something about which they themselves know nothing about? Don't expect an allopath to be an expert in botanical medicine and vitamin therapy, or you will be greatly disappointed. As Dr. Leo Roy, one of the first holistic physicians in Canada, said, doctors are down on things they are not up on. Third, physicians have little or no support from the policymakers and enforcers from above. In fact, they are often discouraged from practicing any form of medical practice perceived by their guild or association as being non-scientific, unconventional, or what is perceived by them as a form of quackery. For fear of losing their medical license and being sued for malpractice after 7 to 12 years of hard work, expense, and dedication in medical school, many physicians who would like to stretch themselves simply choose not to and conform with the conventional rules of engagement. Fourth, and this is a big one, vitamins are not patentable. Pharmaceutical companies have little interest in spending the billions of dollars they currently spend on drug research on natural health products, compared to chemically synthesized drugs, and specifically those that do not exist in nature, known as xenobiotics. Vitamins offer limited prospects in the realm of commercial profit and exploitation compared to drugs that are created from chemicals. Fifth, a typical allopathic physician has a much different view of disease pathology and etiology compared to some of the complementary and alternative medical models. The conventional paradigm of health and disease provides a striking contrast. A huge amount of effort is dedicated to the destruction of the pathogen, microbe, and bacteria with very expensive drugs and technology, as opposed to education and a softer, lighter approach that teaches how to prevent infection and maintain optimum health using homeopathics, botanical medicine, vitamins and minerals, and of course, physical exercise and activity. Drug companies can't patent something found in nature, such as manganese or pantothenic acid. That's something that evolved from nature, not from men. So they have to alter it somehow to make it unique. And this change in chemical structure often increases the toxicity of the substance. Therefore, vitamin research receives scarce financial support, although this is beginning to change, thankfully, which means there are few clinical reports to publish in conventional medical journals. Medical textbooks provide an extremely limited amount of scientific data on the health benefits of vitamins, and very few universities teach nutritional medicine, so very few medical students learn about this important field. Without this knowledge, a very small percentage of doctors practice nutritional medicine, and so millions of people continue to die from cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and other preventable diseases. Dr. Batmanalish, MD, author of Your Body's Many Cries for Water, believes that doctors have wandered from their original tradition of free thinking and medical philosophy because they are forced to memorize pre-digested information in order to get through the curriculum in teaching hospitals. The burden of having to remember so much misinformation around conditions that are simply complications of chronic dehydration must be lifted. But how much money is there in the promotion of water? Money and profit, rather than goodwill and objective science, always seems to be the primary incentive. Medical standards and policies pertaining to the freedom of practicing alternative medicine by willing doctors must also change. In Canada, physicians are intimidated and even revoked by their own college of physicians and surgeons for practicing alternative medicine. A good book on this topic is The Medical Mafia: How to Get Out of It Alive and Take Back Our Health and Wealth by Dr. Ghislaine Lacatoc. I know of several physicians currently involved in litigation who are being forced to expend time and huge sums of revenue to defend themselves merely for their involvement in chelation therapy, ozone therapy, environmental medicine, homeopathy, and even hydrotherapy. Personally, I find these attacks extremely distasteful and unconscionable. Each case represents the epitome of medical injustice, especially when the motive behind the action of these physicians, when analyzed and determined objectively, is based not on criminal intent, but simply on wanting to help their patients to the best of their ability. Doctors have a sense of pride within their medical community, so they tend to be very sensitive to the criticism and ridicule they may encounter from their own colleagues if and when they step out of the conventional circle of acceptable practice, regardless of whether it helps the patient or not. And here's another reason why doctors aren't big on supplements as a first line of treatment in medicine. They are taught that besides preventing the classic diseases such as scurvy, beriberi, and rickets, or using iron to treat anemia, vitamins have little additional value. Of course, we know this is an extremely narrow and limited view, and if physicians took the time to study the right information, which few of them do, and if they actually prescribed dietary supplements to their patients so they could see the difference, a great majority of them would see the light and become medical heretics. But giving up their practice or suffering reprimand for practicing quote-unquote unconventional medicine is not something many physicians are prepared to do. I'm reminded of an experience concerning a physician I met once in Toastmasters. He was quite interested in athletics and sports medicine, but he was extremely orthodox in his thinking. Alternative medicine in his mind represented everything but a rational approach. One day, our discussion involved a debate about the benefits of acupuncture, which he was convinced was a complete waste of time, although he had never experienced the procedure or studied its history or medical application. I explained to him that I had been to China and experienced the benefits of acupuncture myself, and that I had seen acupuncture help many of my own clients here in Canada. But he claimed there was no proof to substantiate any benefit or warrant any further investigation on his behalf, as even my own experience, according to him, was purely anecdotal and a good example of placebo. His attitude also perplexed me somewhat because he was, in fact, of Chinese ethnic origin. Anyway, life has a way of turning the tide against how we think sometimes, and a short time later, he somehow got involved with a medical group that went to China for a six-month sabbatical. During his voluntary rotation in several Chinese hospitals in mainland China, he was exposed to certain aspects of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine that blew his old paradigm away. So guess what? He comes back raving about acupuncture and how great it is for relieving pain and treating all kinds of medical conditions. He said he saw things being done in China with acupuncture that Western medicine couldn't achieve with all its technological advantages. Today, he now practices acupuncture as a physician and teaches the art to students at a holistic learning college. He also advocates herbs, vitamins, and exercise to all of his patients. His experience is a prime example of what I call getting Scrooged. Remember Ebenezer Scrooge from the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol? How set he was in his ways, how resistant he was to change, and how right he thought he was. He was also incredibly miserable. Well, sometimes it takes an unexpected change of life events, especially over those which we have absolutely no control, or exposure to new information, and sometimes a little help from above, to snap us out of that kind of mindset. Unfortunately, medical circles tend to be unreasonably ultra-conservative, with much of their energy devoted to the study and treatment of disease instead of health. Medical schools are organized into organ-specific departments, and the connection between each department gets lost in the framework of isolation. The selection process of each medical student also depends to a large degree on college grades. The process isn't really based on individual ethics, morality, and motive, such as why the student is there in the first place. Students get high grades when they simply repeat during testing procedures exactly what the teacher wants them to say. Students who question what they are being taught are often labeled as renegades or troublemakers and are definitely not rewarded for challenging the status quo. Conventional medical schools, therefore, are packed with students who are good at absorbing dogma without opposition, but not necessarily good at thinking and questioning, because they have learned by climbing up the ladder of conventional education that following precepts handed to them by presumed authorities is the best approach. To succeed in the process of current medical training, one must also be prepared to suffer, as medical school can be likened to military boot camp. Students are ground to pulp intellectually, exposed to massive amounts of information, which they must memorize but not necessarily comprehend, in order to pass their exams. They live on white bread and peanut butter sandwiches and coffee. They have no time for exercise, and they are seldom well rested. So if the training process itself does not respect the health and welfare of the student, and if the teachers themselves do not model optimum health in word and deed, as they are byproducts of the same thinking and training process, how then can the student learn to respect the health and welfare of their own future patients? In North America, modern medicine has evolved into a disease management business instead of a true healthcare society that puts more energy into prevention of disease rather than treatment. It tends to compartmentalize the human body, create branches and divisions that specialize in only one organ or gland, and because much of their teaching is based on reductionism and genetic determinism, they tend to be extremely mechanical in their approach. Therefore, the trend for change and reform within our medical establishment continues to be painstakingly slow and extremely frustrating, especially for healthy, high-energy, athletic men and women looking for insight and advice on how to get stronger, run faster, improve immune function to strenuous exercise, stay well, and remain highly functional. So now you know why I spent 10 years writing and researching and producing the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from one of my favorite guys, Albert Schweitzer. When he was asked by a reporter at a London airport, "Doctor, what's wrong with men today?" And the great doctor hesitated for a moment and said, "Men simply don't think."